Shafaris will say good morning. Let's begin. So we are picking up beautiful daf today on daf Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph, 101A. So we are picking up literally the top line of the daf. Tana Rabbanan. So most remember again, we began a Mishnah yesterday, and the topic of our Mishnah, is when you give raw materials to a craftsman, and the craftsman doesn't do with it what you wanted. So whether, again, whether it's the craftsman creates something dramatically different than what you wanted, or that the craftsman ruined, right? The craftsman ruined, ultimately, again, what it is that you gave him. What's his level of liability? So now the Gemara is going to continue on this theme. Tan Rabbanon. Hanosin eitzim l'chara shlasas mein kisei. So we'll say, if you go ahead and I give wood to a chorosh, to a carpenter, to make a chair. Va'asamehen safsal. And instead he makes a bench. Or safsal va'asamehen kisei. Or I gave him the wood to make a bench, and he ends up making a chair. What's that, halacha? Rabbi Meir Omer, or we'll say just before we go on, we're dedicating our learning. Truth is, it's learning throughout the entire month. For Kobe Rosemore, for Chaim Yaakov David Ben Avigail, who's actually having surgery now. Having a very sensitive surgery this morning, so we hope it's a big zechus that our shiur is at the same time as the surgery. So we hope that in the merit of the Talmud Torah Derabim that takes place early in the morning, an incredible display of service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this little special boy should have a complete and enduring refuah. Amen. So what do I do in this case? Rabbi Meir says, "No sin lo dinei itzav." So ultimately, I go ahead and I give him. Here's what's interesting in this case. So remember, in this situation, although the craftsman has not done what I have asked, Lemaisa, again, he's done something. So because he's done something, again, I have to pay him something. I mean, he objectively increased the value of the item. Well, actually, we'll discuss that, I should say. So Rabbi Meir says, no slave to me. So what's Rabbi Meir's shita is that the craftsman just simply refunds to me the value of the wood. Now remember, this is Rabbi Meir l'shita. So and Rashi says, no sin l'dmeitzav, dikaninhu b'shinui. So let's remember again, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion, this keeps coming back, of Uman kone b'shinui kli, right? B'shinui, right? So that Uman kone b'shinui, that a craftsman, when he improves something, ultimately acquires the item, and at the end of the process, sells the item back to the individual. So according to Rabbi Meir, when I give the craftsman wood to go ahead and make a chair, and he ends up making a bench, so the Maisa, he has acquired the finished product. He's normal, under normal circumstances, he would sell it back to me. Now, I don't want the finished product, so instead, what he does is, he gives me back the value of the wood. Rabbi Huda says, no, ema shevach yeser al yitzia. So Rabbi Huda is like from the Mishnah, and Rabbi Huda says, if the appreciation of the item, meaning if the appreciation is greater than the expenses, no sin lo asa yitzia, then I pay the craftsman his expenses. Vema yitzia yisera ala shevach, but if the expenses are greater than the appreciation, no sin lo asa shevach. I go ahead and I give him the appreciation. So both say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, I have to pay the craftsman, I'm giving back the finished product. So both say, the fundamental machlokes in Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is, according to Rabbi Meir, I'm just getting back the value of my wood. Why? Because Uman kona b'shevach kli. Therefore, once the craftsman improved the utensil, he acquired it. Under normal circumstances, I would buy it back from him. I would buy it from him at the end of his process. I'm not buying this back because what he made is not what I ordered. So he's going to give me the value of the wood that I gave him. Rabbi Huda, on the other hand, argues and says, no, the Uman's going to give you back the bench. You wanted a chair, not a bench. Okay, understood. But Lamaisa, the Uman is returning to you something more valuable than what it is that you gave to him. You gave him wood. He's giving you back a bench. I know you wanted a chair. So Rabbi Huda says, you have to pay the Uman something. Because Lamaisa, A, he worked. B, the item appreciated. I see you shaking your head. V the item appreciated. So Rabbi Huda will say, we're going to give him the lower of two values. Either A, the value of the appreciation, or B, his expenses. Whichever are the lower of those two items, of those two amounts, that's what ultimately you'll pay him. Umode Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir will agree, in Nasan Eitzim L'Charash La'asos Mem Kisei Noah, that if you went ahead and you gave wood to a carpenter to make for you a nice chair, but instead he makes an ugly chair, or safsal na'a, va'asa safsal kar, or, let's say, when I say ugly, inferior quality. You gave him money to make a superior quality chair, he ended up making an inferior quality chair. So we'll say, even Rabbi Meir will agree in this case that what? Imashavach yesar al hayitzia, if the appreciation is more than the expenses, then no sin lo deme hayitzia, then you give him the value of the expenses. Vim hayitzia yisera al hashavach, but ultimately, again, if the expenses are greater than the appreciation, then no sin lo deme hashavach. So we'll say, what's happening over here is, here's what's interesting. In this case, what's occurring? In this case, there's really no shevach kli. You see, in this case over here, I gave the wood to the Uman to make a high-quality chair. And what did he do? He made an inferior quality chair. Even Rabbi Meir will agree in this particular case that what? That lemaisa, again, that we don't, only time we say Uman kona b'shevach kli is ultimately when the Uman objectively appreciated the item. When the Uman objectively bettered the item, right? But in this case over here, he delivered an inferior product. So in that case, again, Rabbi Meir will agree with Rabbi Huda that the Uman doesn't acquire the utensil, and therefore my liability is to pay him the lower of the appreciation or the expenses. So both say, this is the fundamental machlokas. This price that pretty much mirrors our Mishnah. And this is the fundamental machlokas. I give the Uman, I give the craftsman raw materials to make X. Instead, he makes Y. So what do I do? Rabbi Huda, you pay him the lower of the appreciation or the expenses. Whichever one of those two amounts lowers out, you pay him. Rabbi Meir, no, Uman kona b'shevach kli. Whenever an Uman betters an item, right, increases the value of an item, he acquires that object. And the way a normal transaction will work is at the end of the process, I buy it back. In this case, I don't want to buy it back because it's not the item I ordered. And the Uman will refund me the value of the raw materials. That's the fundamental machlokes. We'll see what the halach is. Ibayluhu. Yesh shevach samanam ala tzemer. Ein shavach samanim ala tzemer. So also listen to this. So what happens? So what happens? All right, let me just say this halacha now for just a moment, because every single time I say we'll get back to halacha, we never get back to halacha. So also listen to this. So the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat Hilchos Umin Simin Shin Vav Sif Gimel says the following. Quotes all of these different cases. Nasan Eitzim Lacharash Lasas Meim Kisei Noah Va'asa Kisei Ra'u Safsal. So we'll say the halach we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that if I give raw materials to an Uman and to make X and instead he makes Y, that the halach is I get the object back and I pay him the lower of the two values of either the appreciation or his expenses. Remember, I can't get away without paying anything because Lamaisa, I got back a more valuable item than what I gave him. I gave him raw materials, wood, and Lamaisa, I'm getting back something that's worth more money, and therefore I must pay him either the lower of the two amounts, the appreciation, meaning the additional value in the item, or his expenses. Now, I must say, all of this is predicated on the fact that we paskin, and the Shulchan Aruch says, that was Shin Vav Gimel. This is Shin Vav Beis. We paskin, She'ein Ha'uman Kona B'Shevach Kli. Rabbi said, we do not paskin like Rabbi Meir. We paskin that a Uman does not acquire the object as a result of appreciation in the object. Then now again, now that you know that, the halacha I just quoted to you makes sense. So because an Uman is not kona b'shevach kli, he does not acquire ownership over the utensil because of the increased value or appreciation. Therefore, by definition, when he doesn't comply with the construction or fabrication orders I gave him, he doesn't acquire the object. I get the object back, and I'm obligated to give him the lower of the appreciation or the expenses. Fine. Ibailu. Now, I think Mardu is an interesting question. Yesh shevach samanim ala tzemer or in shevach samanim ala tzemer. So, literally translated, is there an appreciation as a result that there is dye on wool? Or is there no appreciation due to the fact that there is dye on wool? Then I will say, now what is the Gemara actually asking over here? If you look at Rashi, it's the last wide line of Rashi on top. Yesh shavach kilomar, chazusa milsi, olad milsi. Is a change in appearance of an object considered to be halachically significant or not? That's the fundamental question the Gemara is asking. It will say it's going to make more sense in just a moment. But is a change of appearance halachically significant or not? So says the Gemara. Let's analyze. Hechi dami. So what case are you referring to? Ilema de gazel samanim. vidakinhu vitarinhu vitzavabhav. So we'll say, if you want to say that the case is I stole someone's dye. Samanim literally are herbs. So okay, I stole someone's herbs. I ground them up, right? I cooked them up and I made it into dye. And then I use them to go ahead and dye something. And so your question is about my level of liability. So we'll say, obviously in a case where I steal someone's herbs, and then I go ahead and grind it into dye, so of course I'm going to be chayiv. There's liability for that. Why? Because I remember again, I'm going to say, we've learned this already earlier, because when you steal something and you change its state, what happens? You acquire that object. Lo tzricha, the gazel samanim shiruyim vitzava buhum. Rather, what's the case? The case of us is where I didn't steal herbs, but I stole dye, and I dyed something in it. So the nurse says, okay, so what's the question? Mai, yesh shevach samanim agabe tzemer. So do we say that ultimately there is an appreciation when there is a change in appearance? There is an appreciation. Yesh shevach samanim. The dye improves the wool. Do amrale havli samanoi dishak lesinhu. O dilma in shevach samanim agabe tzemer. Or so do we say again, Abosai, if you say that lemaisa again, there is shevach, there is an appreciation, or there is an improvement when there is a change of color on the wool, right? And therefore, again, in that case, da'amrali havli samanai the shaklasinu, that when the owner of the dye comes along and says, give me back my dye, I'm obligated to give him that. O dilma in shavach samanim agabi atzemer. Or perhaps you say there is no improvement when you change the appearance of the wool. The amrle less lach gaboy velomidi. That when the owner of the dye comes along, I could claim, well, I don't have anything of yours. So they will say, now the Gemara is saying this up in a very strange way, which the Gemara is going to question in just a moment. What it sounds like is the following. We're trying to ask a simple question. Is a change in appearance considered to be halachically significant or not? So the Gemara says, what does that mean? So are you asking the following question, which is, I steal dye, I dye someone's wool in it, whether it's my wool, someone else's wool. The owner of the dye comes along and says, give me back my dye. So if we say that a change in appearance is significant, then when the dyed wool is there, that dye is still in existence, and therefore the owner of the dye has the ability to claim that he should be compensated. On the other hand, if you claim that a change in appearance is not significant, then I say to the owner of the dye, well, you have no claim against me. I have nothing of yours. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? V'i ein shevach samanim agabi tzemer. Me matzi amrle les lach gabay velomidi. I don't understand what that means, says the Gemara. So if you're telling me that a change in appearance is not significant, are you telling me then that if I steal someone's dye, I dye wool with it, the owner of the dye comes along and says, give me back my dye, that I can go ahead and say to him, well, because a change of appearance is not halachically significant, I owe you nothing? What, I mean, how does that make sense? Let me say again, at the end of the day, I stole someone's dye. Whether a change in appearance is significant or not, I should still what? Be liable to pay back for the stolen dye. So the Gemara says, Neimale havli samanoi. At the end of the day, the owner of the dye, both say, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, it seems to be in the Havamina, that the Gemara is linking the liability to repay stolen dye to whether or not a change in appearance is halachically significant. So the Gemara says, let's play this out. If I steal someone's dye, then dye will. And let's say it turns out that a change in appearance is not significant. How does that change the fact that I stole dye and that I have to repay that which I've stolen? El lahach gisa. Rather, the Gemara says the following. Rather, let's analyze it in this perspective. So we'll say, on the other hand, we could look at it like this. If you say that, we'll say there is no improvement in an object as a result of a change in appearance, in shevach samanim agabi tzemer, that the dyeing of the wool is not really a qualitative improvement, ubay shlumele, and therefore I'm obligated to pay back the value of the dye. O dilma yesh shevach samanim agabi tzemer, va'amrele hamanchi kamach shaklinhu. Supposed to say, now the Gemara suggests maybe the halacha is the following. Maybe what it means is like this. I steal Reuven's dye, and I dye wool with it. Reuben comes along and says, give me back my dye. So we'll say, if you hold, ein shevach saman amagavit semer, if you hold that a change in appearance does not represent a qualitative improvement, then the maisa, we view the dye as if it's no longer in existence, and therefore I'm obligated to pay back Reuben the value of the dye. If, on the other hand, you hold yesh shevach saman amagavit semer, that a change in appearance represents a qualitative improvement, then when Reuven comes back for his dye, what could I say to him? It's right there. Go ahead, go take it, right? It's just sitting on top of Shimon's wool. But please, by all means, your dye is still in existence. Go and take it back. Says the Gemara, how does that make sense? The Mashakli. How is Reuven exactly supposed to take back his dye? Bit safun? Is he supposed to use a little soap, right? Soap or detergent. Should he wash out the wool and retrieve his dye? Safun aburi me'avar ha-shavala ovid. Obviously, we'll say if he tries to remove the dye with detergent, what's going to happen? He's going to totally ruin the dye. El ha-chama eskin, I will say, listen to this. Okay, now we're finally going to get down to the case. What's the case? Surah says the Gemara, El ha-chama eskin, kagon, the gazel semer v'samon in dechad. Oh, we'll say, what's the case? I steal wool and dye from Reuven. It's Reuven's wool, Reuven's dye. Two separate entities. And what happens? V'tzave lahut semer b'hach samon him. Oh, and I dye Reuven's wool with Reuven's dye. V'kamahader leit nehile l'tzemer. So we'll say, then what happens? I decide I want to go ahead and do tshuva. So what do? I go ahead and I return the dyed wool. I return the dyed wool, thinking that essentially what have I done? I have returned both objects. I've returned the dye, I've returned the wool. So the Gemara says, oh, here's the kasha. So the Gemara says, v'kamahadjale nehile tzemer. So here is the shayla. Yesh shevach saman magabi etzemer. V'kamahadjale saman in vitzemer. So we'll say, do we say that a change in appearance is a qualitative improvement? And therefore, when I return the dyed wool, that is the equivalent of what? Returning both the wool and the dye. O dilma, ein shevach saman magabi tzemer. Or perhaps do we say that a change in appearance of Osai is not a qualitative change in an object, and I return the dyed wool, I fulfilled my obligation to what? To return the what? To return the wool, but I have not fulfilled my obligation to return the dye. That's the fundamental shayla. So the Gemara says, I don't understand why it's a question. Amri, seifuk le di yakun nehele le bedami. Both say there's a very simple answer to this. What's the simple answer? That dyed wool is worth more money than what? Then unprocessed wool. So we'll say, is that not in and of itself the answer that tells us that a change in appearance is significant? That I could sell the dyed wool for more money than the unprocessed wool answers my question. To which the Gemara says, lo tzricha dezaltziva. No, there are times where because of whatever the market realities are, that unprocessed wool is worth more than dyed wool. So therefore, I will say that's not necessarily, meaning, in other words, Gemara's answering is, you could construct a case where lemaisigin, actually the dyed wool is worth less money. But just, so that now, so assuming the dyed wool is worth less money, the fundamental question still stands, which is, is a change in appearance considered to be a qualitative improvement or not? You'll say, what's the Nachman's practical difference? Well, say this case, where I steal the wool, and I steal the dye of one person, and of Reuven, and I go ahead and I dye Reuven's wool. And now, I wanted the tshuva, I return the wool. Have I fulfilled my obligation to return the wool and the dye? See, if you hold that a change in appearance is a qualitative improvement, then lemaisa, I've returned both, the dye and the wool. But if you hold that a change in appearance is not a qualitative improvement, I've returned the wool, but I have not returned the dye. The bicep, another possibility is, but it's an interesting case, kigon shetzava bahu kupa. But now listen to this. So Rashi says, inami tzava bahu kupa. Rashi says, guzzle kof. So a monkey stole it. V'samanim, right? Guzzle kof v'samanim. V'tzava es hakof umachziro. So we'll say, I stole two things from Reuven. I stole a monkey, and I stole dye. And I dyed the monkey. I dyed the monkey. I had a lot to drink. So I stole the monkey, and I stole the dye, and I dyed the monkey. So let's say, now what's the chap in this case? Umachziro lo Delo yachad. So Sigmar answers, if you don't like the case of dyed wool, because you always feel that dyed wool is always more valuable than unprocessed wool, I'll give you a case of where you steal two objects from a person and you dye it, where there's no appreciation in the dyed object. What's that case? That case is I stole a monkey, I dyed the monkey, although I think a dyed monkey would be more valuable, but that's a side discussion, right? Yeah, 100%. I could do a lot with that, but in any event, whatever, it's not a discussion for now. But the Gemara is assuming over here that a dyed monkey does not appreciate. So I stole Reuven's monkey, I stole his dye, I dyed the monkey. But I'll say something very cute over here. Rashi says, by the way, or it could also mean va'amrile kupa shel nezar. Oh, by the way, it might also just mean a wicker basket, right, instead of a monkey. Right, but we're going to go with monkey, because it's just a lot more exciting. So we'll say, we're not finished with the monkey either. So when it says over here, the case could be where, again, I dyed the monkey. So I stole Reuven's monkey, I stole his dye, I dyed his monkey, and then I give him back the dyed monkey. So the shaila is now, I've returned the monkey, but have I returned the dye? So if you say that a change in appearance is a quantifiable improvement, so the mice again, I've returned both the monkey and the dye. If on the other hand, the change in appearance is not considered to be a qualitative improvement, then lemaise again, I've returned the monkey, but I will still be responsible for the dye. V'ibay yisemer, what's the other possibility? Ravina says, how come I ask you on, ki gon ditsemer dechad, v'samonim dechad. Oh, what's that? So Ravina wants to complicate this case just a little bit more. So what are we talking about over here? The wool belonged to one person, the dyes belong to one person, v'ka'asi kof, and I will say what happened. So Ravina's case is a bit different. Ravina's case is that the wool and the dye both belong to one person. The wool belonged to one person, the dye belonged to one person, and a monkey came along and dyed the wool. So we'll say the monkey dyed the wool. So remember, it's Reuven's wool, it's Shimon's dye. The monkey came along and dyed the wool. Now we'll say, now you're going to see the beauty in this case over here is that there's no one actively committing a wrong. Meaning the monkey's acting of his own volition. He takes the dye, he takes the wool, he mixes them together, dyes the wool. Now we'll say the issue becomes Reuven and Shimon have to settle up because now Shimon's dye is sitting in Reuven's wool. So what do we do under these circumstances? So the Gemara says, on one hand, Yesh Shevach Samanam Agabi Tzemer, Da Amri Lei Havli Samanoi Diga Bachninu. So on one hand, the Gemara says, do we say that a change in appearance represents a quantitative or a qualitative improvement? In which case, again, Shimon, the owner of the dye, could say to Reuven, give me back my dye, which is sitting right on top of your wool. O Dilma, Ein Shevach Samanam Agabi Tzemer. Or, I will say, do we say that there is no qualitative improvement in a change in appearance, and therefore again, Shimon, the owner of the dye, can't make any kind of claim against Reuven, the owner of the wool, va'amrilei, because Reuven will say, les lach gaboi klum, I have nothing of yours with me. So we'll say, so again, the fundamental question still stays the same. The Gemara is just trying to frame how the case would look. But the fundamental question is, how in halacha do we view a change of appearance? Is a change of appearance ultimately considered to be a qualitative and quantitative improvement, which would generate financial liability or not? So the Gemara is now going to try to, now that we've established how the various cases come out, the Gemara says solve the question or answer the question. Tashma, suppose let's analyze this. So we learned, Begish et zivo beklipe arla, yidlak. If you have a garment that was dyed with the shells of arla, so we'll say it's an interesting case. Arla, you know, is the fruit ultimately of the first 3 years, which one is not permitted to go ahead and consume or get hana'ah from. So let's say somebody made dye from the peels of arla fruit, and they dyed a garment with it. So what's the halacha? Well, say yidlak, you have to burn the garment. In other words, that garment, you are not permitted to get any kind of benefit from the garment. So what do you see from here? Alma chazusa milsi. Now remember, what's the only piece of arla you have in this garment? Is the appearance. So what do you see from here? The fact that you're obligated to burn the garment tells you what? That appearance is significant, right? That appearance ultimately, again, represents a qualitative and quantitative change. Amar Rav, Rava said, "Hano anir la'ayim asr Torah." So it could be that Arla is a bit different, because for Arla, any type of visible appreciation or any type of visible benefit ultimately will be asr. This sanya, because we learned areilim lo ya'achel. So the pasuk says that when it comes to Arla, areilim lo ya'achel, it's asr. You may not eat it. Ainli ela isra achila. I only know that you can't eat Arla. Minayt shelo yerna mimeno lo yitzba v'lo yadlik bo asaner. How do I know that I'm not permitted to make a dye from Arla, or to make oil from Arla, and to use it to kindle my candle? Talmud Lomar, Ve'araltem Arla so es piryo, Areilim lo yachel, Lerabos es kul. So we'll say Arla is different, because by Arla, again, you're not permitted to get any kind of hana, even just hana that's visible to the eye. That's why, again, if I go ahead and I make Arla into dye, and use it to dye my garment, that garment has to be destroyed. Okay, so it could be, can't bring a rye from Arla. Tashma, Begesh etzava beklip ishri. So we'll say, what happens if I make dye from Shemitah fruit. I make dye from Shemitah fruit. So we'll say, so what's the halacha? Yidlak, you have to go ahead and destroy that garment. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Shvi is last Rashi on the daf. Asra la'aso schor peroser. We'll say it is prohibited to engage in commerce with Shemitah fruit. Uklipe peros kamar velo klipe eitz. So we'll say, so here's what's interesting. So apparently, an act of dyeing garments with dye made from Shemitah fruit is going to be asr, even if I'm not doing it for commerce purposes, because the act of dyeing a garment, by definition, appreciates its value. So anything that causes appreciation and value falls under the umbrella of commerce, which is asr to conduct with Shemitah fruit. Therefore, again, the Gemara says that if I go ahead and I make dye, literally from the peels of Shemitah fruits, and I use that dye to dye a garment, the halacha is that the garment must be destroyed. So the Gemara says, so what you see from here, that what? You see from here that a change in appearance is in fact significant. So shiny hasam da amakra, tihye bav yasotei. We'll say it's different by Shemitah, because by Shemitah the Torah uses lashon of tihye, it shall be, which tells us that no matter what the state of the Shemitah produce, whatever state the Shemitah produce morphs into, it retains its Shemitah sanctity. So Rava, Amadeus, Rava Ramitana. So I'll say Rava contrasted two different rulings. On one hand, we say, Bege Shetzeva'o Beklipe Arla Yidlak. Alma Chazusa Milsi. So we'll say, on one hand, we say that if you have a garment, I will say, in this case, I'm making dye from what we said before, from the shells of, or from the peels of Arla fruit, which I'm not permitted to do. I can't get any hana from Arla. So if I go ahead and I make a dye from Arla fruit, and I dye my clothing with that dye, the halacha is yidlak. I have to go ahead and destroy the clothing. I can't get any benefit. Alma chazusa milsi. So we'll say, what does that show us? That shows us that a change in appearance is, in fact, halachically significant. On the other hand, or minhi, the Gemara raised the kasha, revias dam shenivla bebayis. We'll say this is an interesting case. Let's say, and I remember, a revias of blood, if brought into a home, has the ability to create tumas ohel. So tumas ohel means, so on the classic case of tumas ohel is somebody dies in a house, so anything under the roof with the mace has the ability, or not has, becomes tameh. The boss, and interestingly enough, that halacha doesn't just apply by a corpse itself, but it also applies with the revias of blood. So if there's a revias of blood from a corpse underneath the roof, anything underneath that same roof with the revias dam ultimately becomes tameh. So watch this. So revias dam, look at Rashi, the top Rashi, revias dam, metameh ba'ohel, has the ability to convey tuma in an ohel underneath the roof, tichsiv, akol nafshos meis lo yavo. V'dam hu ha-nefesh, v'kimon rabonam b'drivias dam chayim. So we'll say ultimately, so even though it says, akol nafshos meis lo yavo, dam ultimately is like the nefesh, like the very lifeblood, or is the lifeblood, and therefore again could convey tuma. So listen to this case. So revias dam, shenivla'a b'bayis. So we'll say, let's say, so there was a revias of blood, but it became absorbed in the earth, in the ground of the home. Habayis tame. So ultimately, again, one brisa says that the home and everything in it is tame. Va'amri la habayis tar. But another version says that the home is tar. So we'll say, so the Gemara says, v'lo pligi, it is not a machlokes. Ha bekelim da havu meikara. Ha bekelim da asul lebasov. Rebbe will say it depends. This one that says that the home and its contents are tame, this refers to utensils that were in the home meikara. Rebbe will say meikara means from the beginning. Beginning means what? Before the blood absorbed into the ground. So anything that was in the home at the time that the revius of blood was actually in existence, before it absorbed into the ground, those utensils will be tame. Masha'in came, anything that came into the house after what? After the blood was absorbed into the ground, those items ultimately again will remain tar. Look at Rashi, Bikalim, Dehavu Babayis Kodim Shinivla, Shaisa Be'en. So we'll say any utensils that were in the home before the blood was absorbed into the ground, while the blood was still in existence, Veheya Labayis Labakim Benit, Mulubah Sofa Akash Nivla. So we'll say, so therefore again, the two breasts are not contradicting each other. Any utensils that were in the home at the time that the blood, we'll call it prior to absorption in the ground, those utensils are tame. Anything after the absorption will be tar. So the Gemara says, Nivla Bixus. Let's say the blood came into the home on, well, let's say the blood was on a garment, and the blood was absorbed into the garment itself. So what's the halacha? So we'll say the shaila is, Roin imiskabeses haksus v'yotze mimena revi'ez dam tameah. So we'll say, if, when laundering the article of clothing, you could extract a revi'ez of dam from the clothing. In other words, that if the blood is absorbed in the clothing, if you could extract that absorption, and you could extract a revius of blood from that article of clothing, then ultimately what? Tmeo. Look at Rashi for just a moment. So listen to this. So the Gemara says, so in this case over here, I'm bringing in the blood into a home on the garment. Now there was originally more than a revius of blood on the garment. So now what happens? The blood gets absorbed into the garment. So leaving aside the house right now, the shaila is, what about the status of the garment itself, right? Is the status of the garment, or for that matter, it also has an impact on the house. So what do we do, meaning how do we view this revius of blood that's absorbed into the garment? So the Gemara says, well, it depends. If through laundering the garment you could get out a revius of blood, Rashi says over here, "V'yotzei mena revius dam shemyitnu mayim b'mido yimatz revius yoser." That ultimately, again, if you go ahead and you try to, if you put water in there, you could extract a revius of blood. Then what? Then tameya. Then ultimately, again, I will say, because you could extract a revius of blood, that revius is as if it still exists, and therefore will convey tumah. The imlav, but I will say, if you cannot extract a revius of dam from the article of clothing, then what? Tahora. Rashi says, "Ve'imlav tar habayis shlohil arevius shekvar chaser alav." So we'll say, see here what's happening in this case. In this case, I have a garment that had a revius of blood, or I should say, actually, more than a revius of blood. The blood absorbed now into the garment, and I bring the garment into the house. The shaila is, what's the impact of that blood on the home? Do we view it as if now there is a revius of blood in the house? In which case, again, we have tumas ohel, everything in the house is tame. Or do we say, no, it's no longer a revius of blood? So the Gemara says, it depends. Can you extract, through laundering, a revius of blood from the garment? If you could extract a revius, then what? Then it's considered as if that blood is still in existence. And therefore, again, because it's under the same roof as all these items, it will convey tumas ohel, then the blood is tame. If, on the other hand, you can't extract a revius of blood from the garment, then what, Rabbi Osai? Then there is not going to be any problem of tumas ohel. So the Gemara says, Amrav Kahana. So Rabbi Osai, so now, again, for our purposes, what do you see from here? What do you see from here? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Ve'im laftar habayish shlohil arevius shekvar chaser b'havlo b'ksuso avalaksus tomei." So we'll say, in this case, if I can't extract the revius ultimately of blood from the garment, the home will be tahor. Now the garment itself will still be tamei. But I will say the point that we're making. Skip down a few lines in Rashi. Ve'katani mihas ve'im laftar afagav dechazusa revius ika. We'll say, what do you see from here? Now remember, let's say for argument's sake, you can't extract a revius of blood. But we'll say, what is clear? There's the appearance of a revius of blood in that garment. Yet what? What does the Braisa tell me? That the only time that appearance of a revius is not enough to convey tumah. What do I need in order to convey tumah? I have to be able to extract an actual revius. So what do you see from here? You see from here that a change in appearance is not halachically significant. Because even though I have the appearance of a revius of blood, that is not enough to affect halachic realities. To which the Gemara says, no. Amrav Kano, Mikulu Revius Shanu, Kan Bidam Tavusa Drabana. We'll say this case is actually dealing with a different case of what we call Dam Tavusa. We'll say Dam Tavusa is Revius of blood that came from someone who is dying. Remember again, when we speak about that a Revius of blood conveys Tumas Ohel, so what type of blood are we referring to? That's only blood that emanates from a person who has died. Right? Blood from a living person does not convey Tumas Ohel. The case that the Gemara is referring to over here is what we call Dam Tavusa. Dam Tavusa is blood that comes from a person who is dying. Right? Dying. Right? A person who is dying. And the suffix over here is, did this blood come from them when they were alive? Or did this blood come from them after they died? And both say, and even if it's like half and half, that wouldn't convey tumah. So that type of blood is a suffix. So midoraisa, that type of blood does not convey tumah. Midirabanan, it does. So both say, because we're dealing with a dirabanan case, therefore what? Therefore, we're going to be a bit more makel in our application of halacha. But the point, and therefore, again, that's why it's only in a case where you could extract the full revius of blood from the garment that the blood will convey to mas ohel. If you can't go ahead and extract the full revius of blood, ultimately, again, the home will become tahar. But because we are dealing, and that's because we're dealing with a case of dirabanan blood, what we call dam tevusa. But I will say what the Gemara essentially answers is you have no raya one way or the other of whether or not a change in appearance is halachically significant or not. So we are still stuck with that stuck, but we're still in the midst of that question. Does a change in appearance represent a qualitative change in an item or not? Still the machlokes. Rava Rami. So we'll say Rava Rami time. So Rava contrasted two Mishnayos. On one end it says, Mimin Hatsovin. I will say, from those things, Mimin Hatsovin, from those things that are dyes, so Safiche Satis, Vikotza, Yeshba and Shvius, Uladme and Shvius. So we're talking about now Shemitah items. So from those types of plants from which you go ahead and you make dyes. Now both say, so for example, Svichei Satis are sunflowers. Kotza is also another kind of plant. These are different kinds of plants. Yeshla and Shvius, so we'll say they are subject to the laws of Shemitah. Uladme and Shvius, and we'll say if you sell them, so those monies have Shemitah sanctity. Yeshla and Bir, Uladme and Bir, so we'll say they are subject to the laws of Bir. Now the laws of Bir, we'll say, mean, for Shemitah, you are permitted to keep things in your home as long as what? They're readily available in the field. If they're no longer readily available in the field, you cannot store them in your home anymore. That's called Bir. So they are subject to Bir. The Mehen, anything you sell them for in exchange for, also subject to Bir. So we'll say, so what do you see from here? Alma Itzim, Yeshvan Mishum Kiddush Hashem. So we're going like a little bit on a commercial break over here. So we're still not finished with dyes, but the Gemara says, the point you see from here is that trees, or that we'll call it plants, Itzim wood, is subject to the laws of Shvius. Because I both say these types of flowers, these types of branches, are subject to the laws of Shemitah. Bless you. Or Minu. Well, yeah, we'll ask Akasha. Ale kanim va'ale gifanim. I both say reeds, right? Literally stalks of reeds and stalks of vines. Shegivavan bechava al hasada. That you collected them, Rabbi Osai, to store them. Right? Rashi says, "Bechava lasos mehen machba otsra limos achoref." You wanted to store them for the winter. So loktan la'achila, if you collected them ultimately for consumption purposes, yeshvan mishum kedusha shviyas. They are subject to the laws of Shemitah. So the eitzim ain't b'han kedusha shviyas. Rabbi Osai, if you collected them, let's say for wood, let's say firewood, they are not subject to the laws of Shvius. So both say, so what do you see from here? So we have a stira, we have a contradiction. The first price indicated to us that wood is subject to the laws of Shemitah. Second price indicates to us that wood is not subject to the laws of Shemitah. So which one is it? Umeshani, and they both say the answer, Amar Kradi Achla. The Pasuk says, Rabbi Osai, that what is subject to the laws of Shemitah? Those things that are the akhla, those things that are consumed. Meaning what? B'misha hana'asa ube'uro shavin. Rabbi Osai, that refers to something where the benefit derived and the destruction of the item are simultaneous. Yatsu eitzim shahana asan achar bi'ura. Rabbi Osai, listen to this, very interesting. The only time that apparently something is subject something is subject to the laws of Shemitah is when the benefit and the destruction of the item occur simultaneously. So for example, the simplest example of that is food. Because what happens? The benefit, which is the consumption, occurs simultaneously with the destruction, which is the consumption. So there, benefit and destruction occur simultaneously. Anything where benefit and destruction do not occur simultaneously is not subject to the laws of Shemitah. But also listen to this. Wood, trees, right? Wood. So the benefit is derived when? The benefit is derived. Now, so the assumption is that the benefit from wood is cooking. It's cooking. So ultimately, interestingly enough, wood is only really able to cook after the wood already begins the process of being destroyed. In other words, you can't really cook on a fire immediately. You have to wait for the fire to take a hold of the wood a little bit. So first there's the destruction process, and only afterwards comes, meaning like once it becomes coal-like, then ultimately cooking becomes possible. So once it becomes coal-like and the wood is already destroyed, only then do you get the hanah. Look at Rashi. Yatsu Eitzim. Shela'achar bi'urin shenasim gichalim hudahavi ikran asan. It's only after they're destroyed and they become coal, do you really get hanah from it. So Rashi just throws in over here, interestingly enough, this is why wood is not subject to the laws of Shemitah. Why? Because the hanah and the destruction are not simultaneous. Destruction occurs in the beginning, but yet the hanah is only later on when it turns into coals. Rashi just puts in here, by the way, this is why, again, dyes are subject to the laws of Shemitah, because lemaisa, again, At the time when the cauldron is heated up and the dye is made, that's the time ultimately that the dye takes hold in the wool itself. So the benefit, quote, so to speak, and the destruction occur at the same time. So just back to Gemara, but that's a side point. So Gemara says, one second, let's just finish another line. But there's, Rabbi says, Eitzim Damashkan apparently is literally translated oily wood. I don't know what type of wood this is, but apparently there's a certain type of wood that's oily. And this wood, actually, what you could do is you could light it on fire. So people would use this. Rashi says, I'm sorry?
A pine tree
is like, oh, okay, good. Oh. Good. Vahika eats in the mashkan. Rashi says shemirin kener avuka lenosa. You could actually light this wood on fire, and you can make it into a torch. Vahana asan ubi uran shava techal ashvi. So we'll say. So what about the pine tree, right? The pine wood, where again hana asan and biuran. So there, the destruction and the hana are simultaneous. So why isn't that subject to the laws of Shemitah? Amar Rava, because Rava says tap of kuf beis stan eitzam lahasaka in omdin. Because we'll say again at the end of the day, although that pine may be the exception, we make the rules based on the general realities and not on the exception realities. Therefore, because stam eitzim, regular wood, is not used ultimately for a torch, but regular wood is used to create a fire, let's say for cooking. So therefore, the maisa, again, for cooking purposes, even with the pine tree, with the eitzim mashkin, that wood would only really become usable for cooking after it turned into coals, which would be after the wood was destroyed. Therefore, Allah l'maisa, Gemara is going to suggest that at the end of the day, wood will not be subject to the laws of Shemitah. Why? Because again, bi'uran and hana asan are not shava, because the destruction and the hana of the item are not simultaneous, and therefore, again, they will not be subject to the laws of Shemitah. I'm also going to stop over here for today. Let me just share with you an interesting idea from the parasha.